pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground.
As the show says, we are dancing in the streets. We are dancing in our chairs. We are not going to back down. Right, Lucha?
Heck no, we're not backing down. I'll tell you what, they try to make us back down. We will tell them where they can stuff it. Howdy, y'all. Great to see you here.
Welcome to everybody in the chat room. We've got a full show for you tonight, but can I kick off with a little bit? I just want to say, what a fantastic weekend I had. I was in the midst of some pretty important people and had some time to be able to speak to them one-on-one, as well as spend some time with our dear friend, Dr. Christian, and his manager, Corey. Wow, what a weekend. Got to have some time, and we had Kel, we were looking for you in the show Friday night because we were harassing them as they were doing the show and having a great time. But I was in Dallas this weekend and got to talk one-on-one with the likes of David Wood, with Kamal Saleem, with Abhi Alamani, with Dr. Christian, with who else was there? Dr. Bill Warner. Wow.
Oh, you lucky duck.
Wow. I'm telling you that, you know, and I just love seeing Dr. Warner. He's such a fun guy. And talking with him, and he's given me his presentation to be able to use and talk to people, and all of the statistics and stuff he does is just amazing. But Dr. Christian, Kamal Saleem, just all great, wonderful people. Hearing them speak one-on-one and just getting a chance to talk with them and see them face-to-face. So what a great weekend it was.
Wow.
But because of that is why I kind of thought about the subject matter for tonight. Dr. Christian's article, he wanted it spread far and wide. And so I thought, well, you know what, let's do some justice to it if we can and try and bring it to the attention of anybody that's listening, anybody in the chat room, anybody that's listening in the archives. I want them to know about this article as well. It's an article he co-wrote that was put in the American Thinker on November 9th. And it talks about where is, and I'm probably going to murder the name, Fatih El-Obeidi. Fatih El-Obeidi. Had not heard that name. Probably should have, considering how important he is to the story of Benghazi. Benghazi is where this Fatih El-Obeidi comes into play. So, Lucci, what I thought we'd do tonight is start out by just trying to tell the folks a little bit about him and then where he plays a part in Benghazi, and then carry through the story of what it's all about. Had you heard the name Fatih El-Obeidi before, Lucha?
Not before, no. When you sent me this article, I did. But go for it. Let's hear who he is.
Well, it's hard to actually find a lot of information about him other than, I guess, he's the captain and commander of a special operations force for the February 17th Brigade. And I think they're actually called, the February 17th Martyrs Brigade? Well, I think most of us understood the part where that was the brigade that supposedly was protecting, I use the term protecting loosely, the consulate where Stevens and his team was at when all of this happened. But apparently this and I'm going to spell it for you, because I'm murdering the name, I know. Fatih El-Obeidi. So I'm going to pronounce it as best I can, so forgive me if anybody knows how to pronounce it better than I. But he's the commander of a special operations force for the February 17th Brigade. And he told Reuters that he took a call about 1:30 a.m. from Tripoli telling him that a helicopter was on its way from the capital's Mitiga airport with a rescue squad of 8 U.S. troops. He described them as Marines. Well, he knew about it in enough time to try and bring his brigade. Now, if we look at the brigade, what I was reading about it out on Wikipedia, and, you know, we all have to take that with a grain of salt, I guess, but the brigade, it says it's are considered to be the biggest and best-armed militia in eastern Libya. Really? The brigade is financed by the Libyan Defense Ministry. Well, that might answer some of why they didn't respond, or did respond in a negative way, but the brigade consists of at least 12 battalions and possesses a large collection of light and heavy weapons in addition to training facilities. Its membership is estimated at between 1,500 and 3,500. Really? Lucha, how is it they couldn't get enough people there to save the ambassador that night then? Some of this
doesn't
add up.
Because I don't think they were supposed to.
Yeah, well, there is that. Don't give away the secret too soon. We took out more of the show.
Okay, you go for it, girl.
Anyways, yes, I think I would agree with you. I don't think he was supposed to be saved, because I think he was sacrificed to shut up what was going on. But some interesting stuff is turning up in some of these articles. So that's who he is. And it says here... two more things went wrong after he got the call and realized he had to get to the airport or get to the consulate to try and work his magic. He had a convoy of 10 vehicles, mostly pickup trucks, one mounted with an anti-aircraft cannon. So he said what went wrong. First, Obeidi found four times as many Americans as at the single-story fortified house as he had been told to expect, 37. Not just 10. So he did not have enough transport. Then the villa came under massive attack. Okay, let's see. This time there was little doubt in minds of Libyans who experienced it that this was a well-organized assault by men who had mastered the complexities of military mortar fire. Okay, folks, I want to give you a little bit of timeline on this. This article that I'm reading from right now was written 9/13 of 2012. Does that not tell you that they knew then? There's nothing to do with the movie that caused this? Unbelievable. This attack was planned, Obeidi said. The accuracy with which the mortars hit us was too good for any ordinary revolutionaries. Thank you, Lucha, for putting that in there. This is Dr. Christians. He co-authored, I was going to tell you that too. Let me, Joe Herring writes for the Omaha, Nebraska, writes from Omaha, Nebraska, and welcomes visitors to his websites, and he's got that at the end of the article. And, of course, quite a few of you already know Dr. Mark Christian is the executive director of the Global Faith Institute, a convert to Christianity and a former member of the Muslim Brotherhood. He has an amazing story. He is an amazing man and has gone through quite a bit. So please try to frequent his show on Friday nights at 11 o'clock. I kind of told them they were doing it too late because, man, at Friday night at 11, I'm about zonked out. So I'm hoping they change the hour for it anyway so that I can catch more of it. But anyways, so let's
I'm
get
back to this.
I'm hearing
some feedback, Eliza. Is that me or is that – are you hearing any feedback?
Not from you. Not this time. Is there –
I was hearing a little bit of. Are you guys hearing feedback in the chat room from either one of us? Okay, well, they're all sleeping, I guess. So, okay, Mary says no.
Thank you, Mary. Wake up, folks.
Okay, well, good.
No, I haven't heard any yet.
Okay, good.
Knock on wood, I think we're good so far.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So it was so well organized because they had mastered the complexities of the military mortar fire. So they knew what they were doing. It was well planned. What else does he say? He says, well, some Libyan officials suggested that former soldiers from Gaddafi's army may have been involved in Benghazi. Some of the Islamist fighters also have substantial military experience from years spent fighting with the Taliban in Afghanistan. So, folks, that's a little bit about who he is and where he came from. But let's get back to Dr. Christian's article, okay? I wanted to talk a little bit about the February 17th. There's probably more to the Martyrs Brigade than I'm sure this little Wikipedia is telling us, but so if we look at it from the standpoint of where is he today, he was there on the ground when it happened. He saw what happened. He participated in what happened. He was part of the activities of trying to, I guess, help bring them out and bring them to safety. Since there aren't too many people talking still, we will never know the whole story, will we? But he is a key player that needs to be interviewed, needs to be interviewed by Congress, needs to be talked to, and the information needs to be shared with the American public. This just boggles my mind that we can go this long and still have nothing, nothing. So clearly, if we are to understand what really happened in Benghazi, we will have to tap non-CIA State Department sources. Perhaps the best available source is this Fatih El Obeidi, the head of the Libyan Special Forces Militia unit tasked by the Libyan government with rescuing U.S. Ambassador Chris Stevens along with any other Americans in peril. El Obeidi was on hand for the entire second attack and functioned as the only eyes and ears on the ground for both the American government and the Libyans. El Obeidi was there when the first American was shot. El Obeidi personally helped pull him behind cover. I really hope this is true, and I hope he is a good guy and was helping to bring as many to safety as possible. I just don't know. It's so hard to figure out who the good guys are over there. So attackers, whom he described as more than 100 highly trained militiamen. El Obeidi also witnessed a third American receive a gunshot wound, a man who eventually ended up at Walter Reed Military Hospital, Al-Abidi mentioned this third wounded American the day following the attack, but that knowledge didn't become exclusive breaking news until 10 months later. Lucha just, you know, if there was something that you and I did or a patriot did or, shoot, what did I just hear recently? Some guy who bought a potato launcher, the FBI was at his door stealing it from him and putting him behind bars. This is murder. Murder of our SEALs, murder of an ambassador, and we still don't know what went on. We still have not been able to interview and talk to the survivors of it. Man. I'm having a hard time getting through this. It just makes me want to scream that we still have this administration in the White House. We still have this crook, this liar, as our commander-in-chief. So, Al-Abidi was the first to report how many people were in the safe house when the attack began. He was told to bring transport for 10 individuals. Who told him that?
Good question.
Who gave him that information so that he was ill-equipped? I don't have that here. I wish I did. But I suppose if we were to interview him and talk with him, we'd know that. So, he instead encountered the 37. Within 4 hours of the conclusion of that day's events, Al-Abidi spoke to the media, even commenting on social media as to the importance of his role. Unfortunately, he's been silent ever since. So, why would he be silent ever since? When did this take place? 9/11. 2012? Wasn't it 2012?
Yeah. The 11th anniversary of 9/11.
Yeah. So if we go back, it happened 9/11, 2012, and the article I read early on was the 13th of 2012. They knew this much of it. They couldn't talk to him between then and now, and we're over a year later, and get more details? Shoot, we had McCain over there in Libya. Why couldn't he have talked to him? Oh, no, he has to do other things and meet with the Syrians. All right, I'm going to come back to the one that had the gunshot wound that has been in Walter Reed Hospital, because there was a link to that story as well in this before I go too much farther. So, Benghazi's hero fought alongside fallen SEAL still recovering at Walter Reed. This was written July 25, 2013 by Catherine Herridge from Fox News. Now, this guy, one of the most severely wounded survivors of the Benghazi terror attack, diplomatic security agent David Ubin, risked his life to help save his fellow Americans and is still being treated at Walter Reed Medical Center. You know, Lucha, I wonder if he's being held hostage.
Nothing would surprise me, Eliza.
If they aren't keeping him sedated.
Yeah. We know the things that have been done to our military, and we know they have to kind of go along with it, so it wouldn't surprise me one bit. But we do know that the House, one of the committees, Congressional Committee, did have recently that closed hearing with three CIA guys, I think.
But we've never seen anything from it, have we?
Well, I'm going to post a thing in the chat room, the article in the chat room from Catherine Herridge. State departments at the Benghazi compound knew they were in a death trap, and they made a series of radio distress calls to the CIA annex, and that they were pleading for their lives. I'll post that link in the chat room.
Wow. Wow. Can you imagine listening to that, pleading for their lives? And from some of these links that we've got, that I've got here, basically talk about how they knew ahead of time. They knew ahead of time this was coming. I think it's like 3 days ahead, or maybe it's only 48 hours. They knew ahead of time that there was going to be an attack.
Yep.
Yet they sent him in anyways. So this fallen hero, they're calling him, the diplomatic security agent, early in the night helped recover the body of Foreign Service Officer Sean Smith, going back into the smoke and flames at the Benghazi consulate multiple times until he found Smith, whom he believed to be already dead from smoke inhalation. Now, they've got him there in the hospital still due to multiple surgeries on his right leg, according to this, which was badly wounded. And one of the other stories I read said that it was shattered because he was at some point, let's see, maybe that's later in the story here. Pat Smith's mother, of course, said a very gracious thank you to him for getting her son's body out. But Ubud also went back into the smoke and flames, filled Benghazi consulate several times searching for Ambassador Chris Stevens, but couldn't find him. Sources tell Fox News that during the second wave of attack, Ubin was on the roof. Oh boy, he was on the roof of the CIA annex, along with former Navy SEAL Tyrone Wood and Glenn Doherty, defending the compound, and it was quite harrowing. Said in another, in another sign, the attacks were premeditated. Three mortar rounds rained down on the compound. The first fell short of the annex, about 50 yards away, but the subsequent mortar rounds were direct hits. Both Woods and Doherty were killed. This is where he says the mortar shredded his right leg, Ubin's right leg. Oh, I don't know how he got out of there. So we've got Jason Chaffetz says the State Department has frustrated his efforts to meet with Ubin. He's not been allowed to. Again, this was written in July. So it says another Republican Congressman, Frank Wolf of Virginia, who has gathered a majority of Republicans in the House in support of a select committee to investigate Benghazi, sent a letter to Secretary of State John Kerry complaining that the State Department has refused for months to provide Congress with the names and contact information for the survivors.
Eliza, I'm gonna hang up and I'm gonna go out of the chat room and call back in because I'm hearing two of you and some other weird noises.
I'm sorry.
I think I've got a bad connection because nobody else in the chat room is hearing you weird. So in order for me to hang up from Skype, I'm gonna have to leave the chat room too. So I will be right back.
All right.
Okay.
Hurry back.
I will.
Sorry to hear that. Okay, so he's been trying. It was on March 15th, 6 months after the attack, that the State Department finally confirmed three of its agents and one contractor were injured. Unbelievable. It took 6 months just to do that much? Please. Yet, you know, any one of us, they'd know right away. Says, with more hearings scheduled on Benghazi this fall. Really? Okay, it's fall. Has anybody heard about any hearings going to be happening, any hearings being scheduled? I have not heard any. There's not been any made. Says, some lawmakers hope Ubin will feel, isn't that great? Well, hope Ubin will feel he is well enough and able to publicly testify, because he is one of the few survivors to witness both waves of the attack. We need to call them to order. We need to make sure that they continue these. We need to continue to investigate and find out what is going on with Benghazi. We need the facts, no matter how long it takes to get them. We need to stay on our congressmen and get that done. They need to investigate, find the answers, because, folks, my sense on this is that we're going to find out that there is going to be such an incrimination of the likes of Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, that it is going to devastate her chances of running for president in 2016. We need to stay on them and make sure that that comes out, those facts come out. She is not a candidate that should be running in 2016, but guess what? You know she will. You know she will. Excellent, Kel. I absolutely agree. She needs to be buried for this, for what she has done and thrown them under the bus and let them die, for everything that she claimed was, what difference does it make? Really? What difference does it make if we just take you out behind a barn and, never mind. All right, I'm going to keep it clean. All right, folks, are you back? Are you better? Can you hear
me now? I think
so.
Yes.
Do I sound okay?
Oh, I could hear two of you fine before, so that was no problem.
Oh, that's dangerous. what you got on Benghazi before I go too much further?
Well, first let me give a big chat room shout out to,
okay.
And I don't know if we have Sue listening by phone or not. So a big shout out to Sue
anybody.
If she's okay. Love you guys in the chat room. We've got Echo. Hi, Echo. Freedom C1, who is Anna, our sister in Spain. We've got a guest. Welcome, guest. Golf Dogs of Kafiristan. I love you, Golf Dogs. I love you, man. Holger Awakens. He's got his own great show. Lady Michelle, a loyal listener to many shows. Mary A. Kaffer. Welcome, Mary. You support so many shows, too. Thank you for being here. We've got Not Politically Correct with Trisha, who has her own great show now. I'm so proud of you, Trisha. We've got Poppy from across the pond. Hello, Poppy. No, I'm kidding. And Kel, who's got her own fantastic show, Red Fox Blogger. Mamma Mia, No Sharia, Vito Esposito, ay, ay, ay. Hi, Avito, my Twitter buddy. And last but not least, Vorpal Bite 2. Welcome you all. Thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. We're so glad you're here. I miss seeing all of you when you're not here. You're our team.
I know, it's like we have our
Patriot
BTR
team.
Family. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Well, let me keep kicking in here.
Can what?
I said, do you want to jump in here, or you want me to keep kicking in? I'm kicking and fighting tonight.
Well, I've got, and this is what I believe happened in Benghazi, what Admiral Ace Lyons believes happened in Benghazi. This is a very good article that I'm posting in the chat room. That's called Benghazi, Murder Wasn't the Plan. And it starts out by naming in this article, which in the article that I just posted, the link to the article in this first paragraph, the author of the article that's linked in the article I just put in the chat room, his name is C.O. Jones. And so C.O. Jones, Mr. Jones, he got a phone call from someone close, a political insider that he trusts very much. He got a phone call. And this person told Mr. Jones that Barack Obama wanting an October surprise, and I don't know if y'all remember last year, I was seeing all over Twitter something about an October surprise. We didn't know what that would be, but we were expecting one somewhere, you know. But anyway, this person told Mr. Jones that Obama had secretly arranged with the Muslim Brotherhood for a kidnapping of our ambassador. Then sometime in October before the election, Obama was to orchestrate some great military action to rescue Ambassador Stevens, causing all of America to cheer Obama's strong foreign policy and bravery and making him look like a hero. Well, so this article goes on to give a timeline kind of events. And it kind of puts things into perspective for us. They begin in March 2012 as the conflict in Libya was drawing down. And we all know, and this is in testimony, the State Department started to reduce the United States security presence in Benghazi to normalize relations, you know, to kind of make it seem like, you know, we weren't the big, bad United States of America with all these guns and everything, okay? So they hired a small British firm called Blue Mountain Security. No one seems to have heard of them prior to Benghazi, but okay, they hired Blue Mountain Security, and it was speculated that they were chosen out of expediency. Okay, so the firm, Blue Mountain Security, they ended up hiring members of, and you spoke about this before, Eliza, the February 17th Martyrs Brigade.
Right.
To provide security for the, I don't call it a consulate, it was a safe house. Okay, Martyrs Brigade to protect. Now, why would you allow, I'm going to say it. Why would you allow any devout Muslims to guard our people in Benghazi? They are required by the Quran, by their own beliefs. They're not supposed to protect an American over a Muslim. How in the world the State Department and Obama thought that this Martyrs Brigade was going to protect our people is beyond me. I just don't get that. I didn't get it. And so we're drawing down our security before September 11th of last year. But we've got this February 17th Martyrs Brigade. All right. They are a militia with ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. The hiring process was described as casual, and at least one member of the security team stated that he had never held a gun before. Okay, then we have the other attacks on the consulate. In May, there is evidence of the State Department refusing increased security assets in the area. Now, Well, Christopher Stevens repeatedly asked for security assets to the area, more
right.
security. No, instead of providing more security like he asked, they drew down security. So you've got this perfect setup, you know, for kidnapping. On June 6th, an attack occurred on the safe house in Benghazi when an IED blew up. The timeline goes on. On June 24th, that was when Mohamed Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood guy, he was elected the president of Egypt. Okay, so now you've got Barack Obama helping to oust Hosni Mubarak. They get a Muslim Brotherhood guy there. We know Obama supports the Muslim Brotherhood. So in June, a few months before the attack on Benghazi, Mohamed Morsi comes in as the president on June 24th. On June 29th, he gave a speech stating that he will do everything in his power to have the blind sheikh released. Okay, so this article says, if our speculation is correct, at some point around this time, the White House secretly began discussions for an October surprise. The Muslim Brotherhood, who was essentially already providing security for the Benghazi consulate, now saw a target of opportunity through which the blind sheikh could be released. Libya would fall further under their control, and their friend in the White House would be propelled to another 4 years in office. Okay, so at this time, the Muslim Brotherhood was already planning a movement that would begin in early September as a way of pushing through anti-Islamophobia legislation. Y'all know that UN HRC 16/18, they were pushing that at the time, too. It was also during that time that an expatriate Egyptian Coptic Christian, The Innocence of Muslims, was created and put on YouTube in early July. Okay, so the convergence of this coming together for September. On July 8th, the White House announced it would have a face-to-face meeting with Mohamed Morsi in September because Morsi was going to be in the United States anyway at the United Nations. So here we've got Obama planning a meeting with Morsi, and they announced that on July 8th. Well, this would be a perfect time for clearer heads to find a solution to the would-be crisis that would unfold on September 11th. So then Obama gave his speech at the UN to end Islamophobia. On July 9th, Christopher Stevens requested a minimum of 13 additional security personnel. The request was denied or ignored. On August 5th, the State Department decides not to keep the state security team in Libya and reduces the mobile security detachment. This essentially left the Muslim Brotherhood connected February 17th Martyrs Brigade in charge of consulate security in Benghazi. So, in the weeks leading up to September 11th, the family members, okay, get this, the family members of the security guards at the embassy, they start to warn them that something is going to happen. There's also reports that an unnamed Libyan politician warned the commander of the local security of the coming attack and told them to stand down when it occurred. Okay, so you've got goings on in Libya that they, you know, so this attack was planned. We know it's the 11th anniversary of September 11th. And you've got the State Department drawing down security. You've got them ignoring all the attacks in Benghazi prior to that. Okay, so at this point, the plan was in place for Stevens to end up at an insecure consulate in an unstable country, an easy target for a kidnapping. All the White House had to do was get Stevens to the embassy, which they do as part of his work to recover weapons that the U.S. had given to Libyan rebels. Okay, so they send Ambassador Stevens to Benghazi on September 11th as a meeting with that Turkish consul.
Mm-hmm.
On September, now this is something I didn't know. On September 6th, the State Department's Bureau of Diplomatic Security, now get this, September 6th is how many days before the anniversary of September 11th? On September 6th, get this, you guys, the State Department's Bureau of Diplomatic Security website states the following, quote, OSAC currently has no credible information to suggest that Al-Qaeda or any other terrorist group is plotting any kind of attack overseas to coincide with the upcoming anniversary of September 11th. However, constituents often have concerns around important dates, holidays, and major events. Oftentimes, these concerns are the result of increased media attention to the issue rather than credible evidence of a terrorist plot. That was on September 6th.
Nice.
Since the attack, they have scrubbed that article from their website. Okay, so on September 8th, that is when portions of that movie, The Innocence of Muslims, are aired on Egyptian television. Who did that? Setting the stage and providing an explanation for the September 11th protests. On September 10th, it came out that the Obama administration was putting together a $1 billion aid package for Egypt. It was also brought to light that Egypt wished to buy $1 billion in submarines from Germany. Okay, so you've got these things going on. On September 9th as well, Dr. Sam Abdul-Waris announces the formation of a coalition to fight against anti-Islamic speech. They were trying to pass that blasphemy law thing. Okay, so that brings us to September the 11th. Why was he in Benghazi? Well, he is there to meet with the Turkish consul general for Benghazi, and the meeting took place at the consulate / safe house. And Ambassador Stevens decides to stay at the consulate for the evening. We all know the rest of the story. So remember, you guys, Barack Obama needed his election in November. He needed to look good for that election. Mohamed Morsi had recently gotten elected, and one of his first promises was to get the blind sheikh out. I firmly believe, my gut screams at me, nothing else makes sense to me except that it was a botched kidnapping. They got together, these two Muslim Brotherhood guys, Obama and Morsi, got together, decided that, you know, well, let's kidnap Ambassador Stevens, you know, and then in October before the election, before Obama's election, Obama will do this big military thing and he'll look like a hero before his election, and he'll trade the blind sheikh for Ambassador Stevens so his numbers will go up. Oh, yeah, Obama got Christopher Stevens back. Woohoo! And parallel, Mohamed Morsi would have looked great. Yes, Morsi got the blind shake back. Oh, yes, America is weak. It would have been a win-win for both of them, except that the kidnapping went wrong, except that Christopher Stevens locked himself in that safe room. And they whatever happened with the people on the ground, you know, they set on fire and he died to death of choke inhalation or whatever. Something went wrong. Then you got Sean Smith and Ty Woods going in there to try to help. They weren't supposed to go, remember. They were told to stand down. Why in the hell, excuse my language, why in the hell would anybody be told to stand down if your consulate, a.k.a. safe house, is getting attacked? The military does not stand down. No, you go in there and you rescue your people, unless you don't want your people rescued. That's what I think happened. That's exactly my gut screamed to me. It was a botched kidnapping attempt, and that is why there has been so much secrecy about it, and that is why nobody is talking.
Well, that's very, very, very good, and I would agree and add to that. With Dr. Christian's story here, he adds another level to it. So let me tell you a little bit about what he's got here. He talks about how Russia was involved. I hadn't heard this before, had you? How it appears, read you this. It appears to be more plausible that the entire Benghazi Syrian arms operation had been compromised by Russian intelligence, and that the 9/11 attack was mounted to intercept the weapons intended for the rebels and redirect them to either the Assad regime itself or to Hamas in Gaza for use against Israel should the conflict widen. Had you heard about the Russians being involved? I had not.
No, not really.
This would serve Russian interests by once and for all halting the massive arms shipments funneled through Benghazi to Turkey and from there to the Syrian rebels. Clearly, in the eyes of the Russians, the Benghazi gun running represented an unacceptable intervention by the Americans. Sorry, folks. I can't turn
it
down.
I like that sound.
Clearly, in the eyes of the Russians, the Benghazi gun running represented an unacceptable intervention by the Americans in the Syrian civil war. Russian President Vladimir Putin had repeatedly warned Obama not to meddle in the Syrian conflict. It was widely discussed among the attendees of the G20 summit that Putin feared that the fall of Assad regime, hold on a minute, I lost my place here, sorry, that the fall of the Assad regime would result in yet another unstable Islamist government, as had already resulted from the other Arab Spring revolts. So, now, he's got a perspective here that I hadn't heard before, that Russia was involved in trying to stop the arms shipment. In fact, in the case can be made that not only that only the Russians would have had the intelligence capabilities to sniff out the specifics of the Benghazi operation with sufficient specificity to interdict the operation and seize the weapons in transit. So Ansar al-Sharia has no such intelligence capability, nor do the Libyan militias in the area or even Hezbollah. However, the Iranian-backed militias could function as proxy forces in service of the Russian arms. Interesting, hey? Since could the Turkish ambassador's September 11th visit to the Benghazi mission have been to warn Ambassador Stevens that the Russians were fully aware of the operation? Ambassador Stevens met with several people during his time in Benghazi. It is possible that one of them was senior Lebanese security officer, Major General Wissam al-Hassan, who was absent from Lebanon at the time, with no official record of his whereabouts on or around September 11, 2012. Al-Hassan, no friend of Syria or Hezbollah, headed up the investigation into the Lebanese Prime Minister's Rafiq al-Hariri's Hariri's assassination that laid the blame on Bashar al-Assad's feet. With Hezbollah fighting on the side of Assad, his victory would certainly represent a threat to Lebanese stability, providing Syria with outsized influence in a nation whose leader they had already assassinated. So he goes on to talk about how Russia may have played a big part in this. So let me just, I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but it says, assume for a moment that the Benghazi raid was in fact a Russian proxy operation. The circumstance alone would explain the reluctance of Obama, Panetta, and Hillary to engage the Russian-backed forces in defense of an illegal and compromised CIA operation. Under that scenario, it would appear that Obama made the decision to sacrifice the lives of as many as 37 Americans to avoid stoking conflict between the U.S. and Russia. So they joined in. Gets you paused. Doesn't it make you want to go, what is this all about?
There's quite a lot of interesting geopolitical stuff going on lately. And America, I'm sad to say, we are messing, I say we as a collective, but the man calling himself Obama is messing up this country. What was once our allies aren't anymore. We, you know, Russia, okay, we're not exactly friends with Russia, but now they're going to Egypt. We were friends with Egypt, in a sense, when Mubarak was in power. You know, at least he kept the peace treaty with Israel. At least he kept the Muslim Brotherhood out of power. But since Obama and the whole Arab Spring Islamic Winter thing, you know, we are... our friends and our enemies are, they're just wondering what in the world is going on with this. Look at what Obama is doing to Israel. So it's interesting that Russia, and for those of us who believe in prophecy, in the Ezekiel 38, wars, the war of Gog and Magog, Russia does play a big part. So you've got all these geopolitical alliances forming, and a lot of it seems to be against America, and that is because of what Obama's policies have done concerning our allies and our enemies. And, you know, it just kind of makes you think, America's not in prophecy, and we wonder why, and maybe that's why. What happens to us?
That's a very good question. What does happen to us? We get rid of this administration. We get somebody who stands for truth, somebody who stands for the Constitution. We get somebody who believes in America and wants to create jobs here and allow the American economy to grow. We get rid of all of these fake people that want to stand up and tell us it's their way or the highway. We get rid of all of them. We start over. We start a new, not a new Constitution, but a new group of people to abide by the Constitution. It's almost like starting over as founding fathers again. At the end of the day, we stop paying our enemies. We start enforcing our borders. We start living as free people again. That's where this has got to go. And if we set this up and we let these people die, well, look at what we're doing to our military today. Our military has their hands tied. Our military is not allowed to shoot. What did I hear? I was listening to Trento Vision driving home tonight, and it was Billy Vaughn talking about how his son lost his life with Extortion 17 and basically said that our military is not allowed to shoot back if the enemy is sitting amongst a city, a village, a town, and there might be casualties all around them. We can't shoot back, but they're able to shoot us? What?
I would like to add that Senator Ted Cruz, I just posted his press release in the chat room, and he is now calling for a select committee for Benghazi.
you know, apparently Frank Wolf and whatever politics were going on, and I condemn Daryl Issa and I condemn Jason Chaffetz. You know, they were the ones in the Benghazi hearings, and we thought maybe they were going to do something about it. But what happened? Same thing that happened with Fast and Furious. Nothing. Issa and Chaffetz are blocking the select committee. So is Boehner. Okay, they are not supporting a select committee for Benghazi. So, okay, Senator Ted Cruz, he is a, I mean, look at what he did with Obamacare. You know, he got a discussion going about it. And I think he and Mike Lee and the rest of them that stood for 24 hours got something done. They stood up and listened. They had listened to the people, and they stood up for us. So now we've got Ted Cruz calling for a select committee. And I hope, I sincerely hope and pray that finally, because this is what Benghazi needs, is a select committee. All these investigations, and we've got, God, Congress is busy with so many investigations. You know, Benghazi has always deserved a select committee, and I hope that Ted Cruz can get it done. I really do. We've also got a U.S. general, Vallely. He's on the campaign. I don't know if you guys remember. Today's the 20th. Yesterday was the 19th. Attorney Larry Klayman had that rally in D.C. at Lafayette Park. And I'm posting the article to this general, Let's Make Obama Resign. And that was what Larry Klayman was doing at Lafayette Park yesterday, is to demand their resignations. And he wants to demand, they're demanding the resignations, this U.S. general, who is also a military analyst for Fox News. He is what he terms a national call to action to force the resignations of Obama, Biden, Reid, Mitch McConnell, Boehner, and Nancy Pelosi. So there is a movement. There is a definite movement to get these people out of office. We know that they're not going to resign, but there is a movement to make them resign. I actually think that, and that's what I'm going to be trying to get our Congress critters to do, is you've got Steve Stockman calling for impeachment. He introduced the impeachment proceedings. We've also got Mike Zullo, Sheriff Joe Arpaio's committee that investigated Obama's forged birth certificate. Well, I read an article that they have been meeting with Congress. Mike Zullo and Team Arpaio have been meeting with some congressmen, including a special visit to Steve Stockman, and they're handing out sheriff's kits with the evidence of Obama's forged birth certificates. So there's all this stuff coming against Obama and the massive failure of Obamacare and the 39 Democrats who are going against the party and voting with Republicans to kind of, you know, and that's only because they want to save their own skins. But still, we've got Obama's low numbers, you know, 37% approval rating now. We've got Obamacare failing and there's nothing they can do about it, you know. And I'm expecting a false flag event. I'm expecting something probably overseas, and I could be completely wrong, and I hope I am. But it seems like that whenever Obama's ratings have gotten low and it's a negative news cycle for him, that something happens. You know, some kind of false flag event happens, you know. And so we've got Iran, the thing with Iran and Israel. And I'm wondering if there's going to be pressure put on Israel. I mean, Obama and Kerry are throwing Israel under the bus. Israel knows that Iran is that close to having a nuclear weapon. So is our government trying to force Israel to attack Iran on its own? And could this overseas event? Because Israel's running out of time. As soon as Iran is able to, it's going to attack Israel with a nuclear weapon. Israel cannot let that happen, nor should they. But is America, is Obama going to stand behind Israel? It doesn't look like it. So I don't know. Obama's his ratings are low. I'm seriously expecting something to happen to distract us like it has in the past.
I don't disagree with any of that. And that's the sad side to it is I don't know where that false flag is going to hit, but it's going to hit. And I truly believe it. It's going to be either, I think it's going to be on U.S. soil. I don't think we've had enough blood on U.S. soil yet for these people to wake up and realize what we need to do for this country. I think we've still got to experience more pain. Let me take you back just one bit to Benghazi. One part I wanted everybody to hear and read or hear and know about in terms of this Fatih El-Obeidi. If I could take you back for just one moment, and then we'll go on with all those that you brought up, Lucha. Says Obeidi shouldn't be difficult to find. Just a few weeks after Benghazi attack, he met with CIA operatives who reportedly recruited him to lead a new rapid reaction force to be trained by U.S. Special Forces as part of an $8 billion initiative to stand up a functioning security apparatus in Libya. So guess what? That's why nobody heard from him. Why would he speak out against anything Obama, Hillary, if he's getting paid $8 billion by the U.S. government?
Exactly.
There's your answer, folks. That's why he hasn't talked. That's why he hasn't been interviewed. That's why nobody knows his side of the story. That could be the facts. Could be definitely giving you a whole lot of information to put Hillary out to pasture and to put Obama out, actually not out to pasture, probably behind bars. Libya is a mess. What have we got in the Middle East? Every land that's touched by Islam is a mess. Even the United States these days, even the United States with our Muslim leader, we have no peace anywhere in the world because they have decided it is their way or their highway. It is their Sharia. It is no constitution. They are going to convert everybody they can. It is their right to do it. It is their command from their Muhammad to do it. Muhammad being the perfect man, they have to follow him. It is the only way that caliphate can happen. Not on my watch. Not as long as I have a voice. It's not going to happen. So, folks, we've got to stand strong. Oh, yeah, Poppy. Oprah Fluffo, yeah. It's all racist, isn't it? It's all racist. It's all Islamophobe. It's all, you know, the reasons we just can't seem to get along is because of us. But what did I hear? I thought somebody told me just recently that I guess the black population has given back Obama to the whites. They don't want to claim him anymore. I thought, holy crap, really? I don't want him. What is going on? I've got a computer that's trying to talk to me here for some reason. Sorry, folks. I got all kinds of noises coming at me. Anyways, we need everybody to stand strong. We need everybody to stand up and speak out. One of the things that Dr. Warner said at the conference this weekend was his presentation is about the demi-church. And I so agree with him that we've got the churches afraid to speak out. We've got to get our churches to stand up to this and speak out against it and not feel intimidated and not feel like they're going to lose people attending their church. We've got to get them to realize that is the protection of Christianity, and it is what they should be doing, not submitting to Islam in their belief, not participating in interfaith. We've got this country to worry about, and I am scared that we are losing it. I am scared we don't have enough people standing up for it. I believe we've still got to go through some pain before we're going to get there. But share everything you can possibly share. Participate in everything you can possibly participate. Investigate every interfaith activity. Go in and disrupt and let them know you're not going to sit down. Stop anything in Islam in terms of the school books. Watch your children. They're going after our children. They're going after the schools. They're intimidating teachers. They're intimidating the school board. They're trying to stop people from speaking. They're trying to, met one of the other speakers there. Broke my heart. She was, Julie, I think it's Aftab maybe. Forgive me for not having the exact name right. She was a former Pakistani that came here at 16. At 16, she was sprayed with acid because she was Christian. What a lady. What a strong face. What an amazing woman. I was in tears at the end. She stood strong in her faith. She stood strong in knowing that Christ was the way. She knew and she stood for it. And this is what she gets. For something like that, how can that be such a threat? How can that, some man had some way of putting battery acid into a container. You know, when I think of this, I think, just once, I'd like to see the bottle break in his own hands and dump all down him. How do they do this? How do they get so threatened by young girls, by children?
Well,
what is the threat?
I can explain it.
Explain it to me.
Think about it. I wish I could quote Bible scripture better than I can. It's in Ephesians. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against the evil rulers of this world, and spiritual warfare. And I take it to the spiritual level. And it's not necessarily that girl threatens that man. It's that Satan is threatened by God, and he's going to do everything he can to lash out at God. So whether it's the hatred of Israel, whether it's the hatred and the persecution of Christians and Jews, it is because Satan knows that he only has a little time left, and he is doing everything in his power to get rid of anything that has anything to do with God. And we know that, if we as Christians are filled with the Holy Spirit, we've accepted Jesus into our lives, and we are guided by his Spirit and his goodness, and we think good things and we wouldn't do bad things to people. On the reverse side of that, you've got people guided by the devil, by Satan himself. Now, am I saying they're possessed? Not necessarily. But you've got people motivated by hatred, and hatred comes from the devil. So why is that man threatened by that girl? Because Satan is threatened by God, and he wants to silence her. He wants her gone, because Satan wants everything for himself. He thought he was greater than God. That's why he fell from heaven. Imagine, with everything going on our physical plane, on this earth, imagine the spiritual warfare that is being had in the heavens with what is going on. You know, and Kel just posted in the chat room, they're talking about the knockout game. And,
yes. Go ahead.
Fox News has been on top of it somewhat. You know, a lot of other news organizations aren't saying it. But there's been a lot of black mob violence going around for a heck of a long time. Well, Obama, if you had a son, would they look like these guys? You know, and this knockout game. They're knocking out Whitey. They're knocking out Jewish people. You know, and that's from hatred. Obama is the most divisive president we have ever had. When I called him president, I can't believe I did that. Slapped me across the cheek.
Yes.
But, you know, we've got all this hatred going on. We've got Oprah. They were talking about Oprah in the chat room. And, okay, well, you know, I had heard that she was kind of going against Obama. She refused to attend something. Okay, so then
let me just jump in real quick for everybody. I just put Julie Aftab's story out as a link in the chat room, too. So go ahead. I just wanted to let everybody know a little bit about her.
Okay, good. So we've got all this division, and we've got, Oprah. Let's take Oprah Winfrey. She had started to go against Obama.
You can have
Obama.
Her. You can take her anywhere you want. Off
I
the
know,
planet.
I don't
Sorry,
want
go ahead.
I don't want to. Sorry, I'm not a racist. Yeah, but now she gets the Presidential Medal of Freedom today, and just last week
Oprah
she made
did?
The comment.
Wait a minute. Oprah did?
They had the ceremony today. She among many, got the Presidential Medal of Freedom. But wasn't it just last week, Eliza, that she was talking about how she tried to put it in a, you know, that maybe some of the people that are against Obama, it is because he's African-American. So she got back on that racist stuff.
May I stop you one moment?
I think it was last week. Yes,
May
stop
I stop
me.
You a moment?
Yes,
now,
please.
Here's the thing. Here's the definition of African-American. You're born in Africa, and you move to America, and maybe you get citizenship here. That would make you an African-American. Two things. He was never born. He was an Arab. And number two, I'm not so sure he's a U.S. citizen. So he's not an African-American.
If he was born in Kenya, wouldn't he be an African-American?
Well,
but I hear you.
He's Arab, though. Was he born in Kenya? He wasn't born in Kenya, was he? I don't know. Anyway.
There's a lot of evidence to that. Look at his Harvard. Look at the biography of him. And I think
it was
Harvard.
He was born.
I think he was born in Kenya. I mean, they didn't take that down for years. And then you had, we weren't even on the subject, so I don't have it in front of me. The Kenyan-born senator. There was an article in some newspaper when Obama was just going to be senator. Kenyan-born Barack Obama. There are places in Kenya that says Barack Obama was born here. His grandmother says he was born there. He even made a slip himself. You know, wherever he was born, and I have to say this. I have some African friends that were born in Africa. Alfred is one of them. He's got a passport shop several blocks from me, but he's been my friend for a long, long time. I love this guy. He's from Africa.
Him an African. And if he's in America and living here now and a U.S. citizen, that'd be an African-American. But 99% of the blacks in this country were never born in Africa, so they're American.
Exactly. And true Africans don't really like it when black Americans call themselves African-Americans. They're like, wait a minute, you weren't born in Africa. But we're off the subject. I'm sorry.
I know we are. We're way off subject. That's all right. Keep going. I don't know. Since we're way off topic, let's just keep going. Did you see Sebelius had some media watching her enroll somebody in the Obamacare, and it crashed?
Yeah.
I love it. It is crashing and burning, and the liberals now are starting to fry him. You've got Kirsten Powers just really upset. And what's there now in the next couple of months? I think in January, they're expecting another $100 million to be canceled. And the one person that he was expounding on Obamacare, it was so great to hear from her. She didn't have any insurance. She had a son that was, I think, autistic and pre-existing anyways, and this and that. And she got to get on Obamacare only to find out he didn't do his investigation correctly because he was using her as a prime example of why it's so good. She got a notice that said, sorry, you're not on it. We can't give you the insurance. I can't remember what the reason was, but she didn't get the insurance. She couldn't sign up. So at the end of the day, she's still without insurance. So, whoops. Oh, she lost her tax credit. So here it is. At the end of the day, they don't even know what they're saying. They don't even know who they're talking about. They don't even know who's good, who's bad. Oh, the world's a mess. Isn't it a mess? Have we solved the world's crisis yet? Gosh, there's
Obama
so much going
is
on.
The world's crisis. You know what? A lot of stuff going on in the world right now can be led back directly to the man calling himself Barack Hussein Obama. And did you hear that interview with Mia Marie Pope and Dr. James David Manning by any chance?
No.
Oh, girl. I'm sure she knew Barry Sotoro in Hawaii. They went to school together. And
is
she
still
was
alive?
Yes. She was interviewed by Dr. James David Manning just a few weeks ago. And she describes him as a pathological liar back then.
Yep.
There was a picture of him in a transgender, this green, ugly gay suit. She said he was a homosexual.
No.
That he used to always have drugs,
but that he got those drugs through rich white guys or something. Oh, I'll have to send you that interview. Mia Marie Pope. Matter of fact, yeah, it's on Otla Worldwide. And matter of fact, I had contacted, remember, wasn't it you and I that had Dr. Manning on our show, or was it RZ?
No, you was with RZ, I think you had, but we had talked about it because I came across a couple of his interviews. They're just, some of them are quite hysterical, but he's so good at it. We'll have to find some of his YouTubes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I still had Mrs. Manning's email. So Mia Marie Pope, Barry Sotoro's high school acquaintance in Hawaii, she had said that at the end of the interview, she had told Dr. Manning that anybody that wanted to get in touch with her, she would give him their phone number. So I contacted Mrs. Manning to try to get her on our show.
Okay. That was with Tricia. Tricia's saying it was
okay.
With her.
Okay. Thank you, Tricia.
Yeah. I know you and I have talked about it when I came across him. What?
It was a Monday morning conference call. That's right, Tricia. Thank you. Oh, my goodness. It was a conference call. Okay. Sorry. Thank you, Tricia.
All right. Lucha's on so many shows, she can't keep straight who's what, where.
I'm on so many of
golf
something.
Anyway. Golf, is this it? Golf, is this the one? What is this, YouTube? Let's see. I'll probably end up. Miss Mia Maria Pope.
Thank you, Golf.
26 minutes long. I'd play it, except it's 26 minutes long. I'll have to try and see if I can get some of it for our next week. Well, listen, before we get too far, I want to do a little advertising, if I may. Lucha has been working very hard. She has just been diligently pushing for guests to be on the show. And God bless her for all the work she does. Because we now have, I'm going to advertise ahead of time on this one because I think it's going to be a great one. Mark your calendars for December 11th, our Wednesday show on December 11th. We are going to have Emil Imani back on, and we're going to have Lisa Daftari, the journalist we had on as well. We're going to have both of them on talking to us about Iran, the before and after the Shah, and we are going to find out what they know, when they knew it, and give us a little bit of history. So please mark your calendars and bring one and all, because that should be, and we're going to make it a two-hour show. So December 11th, and I think it's just going to be a great show. Emil was fun to talk to in Dallas as well. We're great people, man, speaking out and risking their lives. I'm telling you, you know. Think
yes,
about it.
I'm
you
glad,
and I speak.
I was gonna plug that too, because I am so excited, because I know that when we had Lisa Daftari on, there was so much else to talk about, and we had, 30 minutes with her? How old was I in 1979? I think I was a teenager.
I don't know, dear.
I was a teenager. And I, you know, peripherally, I kind of remember the overthrow of the Shah. And Iran is in the news right now. But that, the overthrow of the Shah, you know, I hear bits and pieces of it. And that wasn't a good thing. And Jimmy Carter wasn't a good thing. And to hear I from two people, Emil Imani and Lisa Daftari, that were there, that can tell us, they have intimate knowledge of Iran before the Shah, after, during the overthrow of the Shah, and Iran present day. And I am so very looking forward to this show. Girl, you don't know. To hear from them, I'm excited,
yeah.
Eliza.
Yep, I am too. And I'm hoping, and let's not give away a secret, I'm hoping we might have an extra special little part to share with you with it as well. We're trying to get some more details on it, but we're going to work it out, and we're going to have a great show, and they're both going to join us, and they're good friends as well. So from what Emil was telling me, that they're very good friends, and so it should be an excellent show. It should be just a lot of fun. A lot of good information as well. Yep. What, Kel? I tutored a kid who was smuggled out of Iran. Oh, my gosh. Kel, really? tutored a kid who was smuggled out of Iran when it fell. His dad was a general under the old regime. Oh, my goodness, Cal. Wow. Well, we would love to hear from you with some questions on what you learned from him. Wow. How old was the kid? How old was the child, Cal? I'm curious. Anyways, 14. Wow. That's great. Boy, then he was at an age where he saw a lot. Amazing. We'd love to hear some of that. So anyways, we've got that coming up, and hopefully a few more down the road. But what else is going on in the world besides Obama, besides Obamacare, besides crap in the news? I wanted to share also, I saw the Clarion Project had an interesting link. Let me share that with you. Looks like they're gathering a whole history of stuff. Where did it go here? On Islamist organizations that they're asking for help to fill in the blanks on as well. They've got a whole listing of states, what organizations are in each state. Looks like they're gathering and just compiling in every state. In California, sorry, Lucha, California is pretty busy. Masjid al-Islam, Islamic Circle of North America, but I half suspect all of these, a good 70% of them anyways, are in most of the other states. They don't have my state here, but I can tell you right now that it is in my state. So, and they're only listing one in Michigan, and I know there's got to be a whole lot more than this Islamic American University. So I think it's a good one to help jump on the bandwagon and help them fill in the blanks on the missing states as well as the missing organizations that are a part of it. As a team, we all work together. We share this information, then we stay a little safer, I think, in terms of trying to get the information out. I think that's the only way we're going to win this. Well, that and a lot of prayer, I should say,
well,
I guess, too.
Yes. And another thing, I think this is what I think should happen, y'all. This is what I really think should happen. Before I say what I think should happen, and y'all are going to love this. Before I say that, though, I want to give another chat room shout-out because we've had quite a few more people jump in. And so, big chat room shout-out, Iggy Mom, Cal Living, Echo, Freedom C, Anna from Spain. We've got a couple guests. Welcome. Hold Your Awakens, Lady Michelle, Mary, Trisha, Poppy, Red Fox Blogger with Kel, Beto Esposito, Vorpal Bite, and Gulf Dogs of Kafiristan. Thank you all for being here. We love you all, and we couldn't do this without you. So this is what I think should happen, and it has to do with sex, a lot of sex. Yes, it does. I think that...
Uh-oh.
Well, yeah. I think that Donald Trump and people like him, I mean, I might just email Donald Trump or try to call him or something. But, you know, I think that we should have farms. I think that, you know, not only for a prepper, from a prepper point of view, who knows what could happen. We could have an EMP attack. We could have an attack. We should be prepared to take care of ourselves. So patriotic Americans should buy up a bunch of land, acres, and have farming communities where people can go build their little hut, you know, whatever, be self-sustainable, you know, build, you know, have your own vegetables and fruits. And, well, sex farms, Trisha, well, that's only to encourage your children to have a lot of babies. Muslims are having 8 to 10 babies. Muslim women are having 8 to 10 babies. Well, we need, and in our current society, we can't afford to have a lot of babies. But if we were living on farms where we had our own, you know, where, I mean, just think of it, big communities of patriotic Americans, we're growing our own fruits, we're growing our own vegetables, we've got our own cows and pigs and everything else. We don't need the government. We don't need jobs. We're doing our own little self-sustainable things, you know, kind of off the grid as much as we can be, you know. But let's have a lot of young people that can have a lot of kids. Encourage them to have kids. Encourage young married couples to have a lot of kids, because that's what we
Mary Kaufman says. It sounds like a commune.
Well, yeah, but we're not going to indoctrinate anybody. It's just, I mean, there's no indoctrination. Just have
They're
kids.
They're asking if Holger is stirring in it. Holger, have you got a reputation or what?
Patricia, plant the seeds and grow the babies. No, but I mean it's funny. But
Golf
seriously.
Dog wants to join in. This is really getting off the rails tonight. Oh my goodness.
Ooh, hold your hands. I'll get the women folk to load up. Golf dogs. I can't have any more babies, but we can encourage our young people. You know,
you can take care of them while the young ones are having them. Huh?
You know, and then us old geezers, we can homeschool those babies. And then the young ones can farm the fields. And you know, I'm not going to slaughter any cows or pigs or anything. But I mean,
it's got to be a farm with a lot of pigs.
Yeah, bacon. Heck yeah. Make it all happen in Texas, and I don't think it's going to be in California. But, you know, I mean, because they outnumber us, and they're going to outnumber us. Seriously, Muslim demographics are going to take us over. Well, how do we counteract that? We have more babies than they do. So
here's the commune. It's going to have young babies, but it's also going to have a shooting range.
Yes.
It's also going to have bunkers.
Yes.
Also going to have underground, little underground city.
Yes.
Let's see, what else has it got to have?
Martial arts training, covert training, whatever.
Yes, counterterrorism training. Yeah.
Underground warriors to, you know, get, if we lose electricity or whatever. I mean,
that's right.
You know, all that good prepper stuff. Heck yeah.
That's right. All right. Who's coughing up the first buck to do it? I'm collecting. Send
I'm going to call Dr. Chop.
Yeah. I'm sure he'd jump on the bandwagon.
I know.
It'll be the Trump village.
Yes, we need a town where we have constitutional sheriffs that are not going to allow the feds to come and raid
our pile. We'll just get our pile. We'll bring in Arpaio and his posse, you know, and they'll be the police for the commune, right? I think that works.
And Sheriff Mack and all them constitutional. Oh heck yeah, it's what we got to do, you know. I mean, I would love to be on a survivalist farm and just work the land and you know, have babies. Everybody, just tell your grandchildren have a lot of babies. You know, I'll go move in a minute.
Yikes. What we are encouraging. Oh, my goodness. Well, folks.
Hey, be a good sales pitch. You know, all you young people. I mean, sex sells. People know that sex sells. So we can sell sex as a young Christian married couples, you know, that have taken your vows before God.
We'll have the first family there will be, what's the family with the like 28 kids?
The Brady Bunch.
No, they only had six. I couldn't stand the Brady Bunch. I hated that show. Yuck. No, there's a family with like 28 kids and they were on TV for the longest time and they're strong Christians. And I think it's, maybe it's not 28. Maybe it's like still close to about 18 to 19. There was a huge family. They used to be on TV. They used to have a big RV that they went everywhere in. And so the older ones started getting married and having their babies, and they all continued to add to the families. And it's like, holy crap. How do you get all those, and how do you move all those folks? You know, we'll have them be the first family, and then they'll be the example. Think it's 19, Mary? Yeah, it might be 19. I can't remember who they were. Oh, goodness. Well, folks, this has been an interesting night, a very good night. I hope you learned something. It's a little bit about Russia, a little bit about Syria, a little bit about Iran, and a little bit about sex. Of course, that was from Lucha, so if you've got any questions on that side, ask her.
No condoms allowed.
What's that?
no condoms allowed on our farms, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Anyways, well, I hope everybody has a great night, a great evening, a great day, a great week. Join us next week. We think we're going to have a guest. I still haven't gotten confirmation on it yet to put it out there, but I think we're going to have another guest next weekend to help us talk to some of the Middle East and Islam and all the crap that's out there. And I'm going to close it out. Lucha, I'll let you say your goodbyes, and we'll close it out with a song. Good night,
God
all.
Bless
God bless
all.
Everybody.
Yes,
sorry, go
ma'am.
Ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm putting it in the chat room. Go ahead.
Oh, I think I missed Michelle in the chat room. I'm sorry, Michelle. I think I missed you. Well, we love you all. God bless you all. Encourage your grandchildren to have a lot of babies. And, you know, seriously, you know. And God bless America. And may we as a nation turn back to God in true repentance, asking for forgiveness. Because that's who we need to turn to, is our Lord and Savior. Because only with Him can we even have a chance of trying to save America. So, okay, thank you, Michelle. We love you guys. Thank you so much for being here. And Eliza, I love you, girl. Shoot.
Thank you, and you too. We're going to rock out tonight.
Come from the cities and they come from the smaller towns. Beat up cars with guitars and drummers go and crack, boom, bam. ROTK in the USA, ROTK in the USA, ROTK in the USA, yeah, yeah. Rockin' in the USA. But I said goodbye to the family, said goodbye to the friends. With the poppins in her head and very little money in her hand. Some are black and some are white, and they ain't too proud to sleep on the floor tonight. The sign says that Jesus, you know that day just mine. Wagon in the USA. Get changed.